This is Michael Brennan with Catholic Radio in South Carolina, and we have Malcolm Brennan, George Barber, Donna Barber, and Bob Ketchum with us. They're all from the 40 Days for Life campaign down in Charleston. Malcolm, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about the 40 Days for Life campaign.
Well, the 40 Days of Life is 40 days of peaceful, prayerful vigil at an abortion clinic. We have an entire team of people that focuses on providing 24 hours, 7 days a week coverage at the site so that there's a continuous stream of prayer for the entire 40 days.
And where does that take place?
At the abortion clinic on Fusler Road. It's called the Charleston Women's Medical Center.
And you're the director for the local 40 Days for Life down in Charleston.
Yes. How did that happen?
You step backwards when they ask for volunteers. If people were interested in getting involved with the prayer vigil, who would they contact?
They can contact me at 906-5511, or they can contact Donna Barber. She's our vigil coordinator. She actually has more access to what time slots need to be filled.
We are talking with Malcolm Brennan, George and Donna Barber, and Bob Ketchum, and we're talking about the 40 Days for Life campaign in Charleston, South Carolina. And Donna, again, give the number out where people can get in touch with you.
Our phone number is 797-1131, and our email address is georgebarber14@bellsouth.net.
Tell us a little bit more about some of the stories that have come out of 40 Days for Life for you and George.
Well, there have been several stories that have come out of women that have come across and asked us what we were doing out there and have told us their stories. There have been several who have changed their minds because of that, and we have directed them to the Low Country Pregnancy Center because that is the avenue where they can get a lot of good help, whether they want to have the baby or whether they would like to give the baby up for adoption. So they see us sitting out there and they come over to find out what we're about. And we direct them to places where they can go. They can get counseling at the Low Country Pregnancy Center. We give them the information for Rachel's Vineyard and for Silent No More and other areas where they can get help.
And Donna, could you give out the numbers again where people might get in touch with you and become part of this 40 Days for Life campaign?
Our phone number is 843-797-1131. And our email address is georgebarber14@bellsouth.net.
Thank you, Donna. And now I'd like to bring in Bob Ketchum. Bob, tell us a little bit more about your experiences with the 40 Days for Life and how you got involved.
Well, the way I did get involved, me and George Barber, we worked together over 10 years. Of course, George is Roman Catholic, I'm Baptist, but we've always got along very, very well. Always had a great deal of respect for each other. Knew that the other had a strong faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. And George was already involved as getting ready to be director, and that campaign was the first time that I came out and just prayed. That was my initial participation. I had some apprehensions in the past just because of some of the reputation of some of the groups that came out there that was more in your face. Really, I saw them as people that would really just place judgment on these girls, and it was never my heart, and I really rejected that. And the more I got to know about 40 Days for Life and the perspective they come from was really in tune with my heart, where it's not a matter of judgment, but it's really a love for the girls first, because if you don't save the girl, you don't save the baby. So I did get involved that first year simply as prayer, and then I'm not sure what campaign it was. George had approached me, and someone had come to him about me possibly being director of the next campaign. Really, which was a fast movement because I had just gotten involved. I prayed about it and felt like, you know, God was putting that on my doorstep. When he puts something like that out there, that I have but one choice, and that's to say yes. And what I did tell George was, if I would be director of this, that the first thing I would want to do is build a team. And I know that God's intent is never for one person to be wore out by doing so many things, but that he wants to spread the wealth. And by sharing opportunity with others to serve, I know that as we got involvement, it would bless other people's hearts to be involved. So we did build a team. Things got more organized, and I was able to get involved in that campaign, and as well as was director two other times.
Bob, can you relate one personal story that touched you, touched your heart when you were at the abortion facility? Just one person that stood out.
You know, we've had several girls that actually have changed their mind, but one story that does stand out, actually a grandmother named Charlene and her daughter, Kristen, and then the baby's name was Madison, and they actually come to the abortion mill to have an abortion, and it was the grandmother that was pushing it. Her daughter had gotten pregnant at 16 years old. Her attitude really was, I've raised my children, there's only one option, and that was abortion. And so the grandmother was very much, by her own testimony, was very much pro-choice. They went into the abortion mill, and after seeing ultrasound, the grandmother, at that point, whose heart was hard, was softened up, and she said, there's no way we can have this abortion. What's really striking about the story is the young lady, the 16-year-old named Kristen, never wanted to have the abortion. She wanted to have the baby. So now her and the mother was on the same page, and they left that abortion mill knowing there's no way now. We know that this is a human being. When they came out, it was me and another girl named Karen that was standing at a driveway, and she had come out, and we saw them go in, but when they came out, the grandmother with her daughter next to her said, okay, we've changed our mind. Now what do we do? They wanted an answer. The beauty of it all was we was able to tell them, and we have a blessing because we have a Low Country Pregnancy Center right there, and we're limited in our advice and what we can do. They have counselors over there that are expert at what they're doing, so we was able to give them the number and the information, and they were able to go to the Low Country Pregnancy Center where they got good counsel. They did have the child, and just about a week ago, that little baby was in our church.
Excellent.
And now let me just add that on our Facebook page, 40 Days for Life Charleston, on there is the picture of the grandmother, the mother, and the baby.
And how would you ask your Protestant brothers and sisters to participate in this 40 Days for Life?
It's something that crosses denominational lines. Many times, I know just in the Charleston area, people think it's something that's Catholic, which it's not. And the beauty, again, I talked about me and George, how we have a good relationship. And we're not two different faiths. We're just of two different churches. He's Roman Catholic. I'm Southern Baptist. What I would say to anybody, the Protestants, is, you know, if there's a baby that's lying on the ground getting ready to get hit by a car, are we going to argue about our faith, or are we going to go save the baby? So abortion, in my opinion, is the tragedy of our day, that it supersedes anything that goes on in our country, whether it be financial problems that we're going through now. They keep talking about jobs, 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 which is important, about the economy, but there's nothing. I don't think we'll ever have God's blessing on our nation until we put life first. So I would say to the Protestants in the Charleston area, it's time to get busy, time to quit talking about it in classrooms and in homes, give an opinion about how I'm pro-life but not doing anything about it. It's something that we are unified about, whether you're Catholic, whether you're Protestant. It's something, I can't think of a greater cause to come together than to stand for life.
And Bob, what about the guy who just finished a 12-hour shift and he said, man, I want to do this. I'm on your side, but I'm tired. Is it easy to come and maybe spend some time, just a little time, whatever time you can?
We asked for 4 hours, but you don't have to do 4 hours. I know with Donna being vigil site coordinator, there's times when she puts people down for an hour. A lot of what's going to direct that person that's tired is going to be where his heart's at. I know that if you're passionate about something, you're going to be willing to go that extra mile. But if they can only do an hour, and if it's an hour, 15 minutes, a half hour, God certainly appreciates our faithfulness. So, yeah, that person that can't do 4 or 3, you can still be used.
And what kind of facilities do you have set up down there? I think you and George have set some things up to make it a little bit easier.
Yeah. What we have is we originally had a tent down there that was really very nice. It was 10 by 10. Kept us out of the wet. We wrapped it up in plastic and really had a unique look about it. It wasn't pretty, but it served a purpose. The only problem with it was we was on public right of way, and also we was right next to a hydrant, and it took one complaint, and we had to take it down because it was stationary. So we started talking about a camper shell to put on George's truck, his classic that he has that's about 50 years old. We got the idea, you know, we're pretty handy. We can build something to put on the back of this truck. So what we did is it looks like a little house, a little shed that's on the back of the truck. In the middle, I can stand up in it, but it gives people a place where They can sit if the weather isn't good. Donna has it organized with applications and different things that we give away, the feet, the wristband, information about who's on watch, you know, who's going to have the next watch. It's a good resource center and as well as a good shelter if the weather really gets bad.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We're speaking with Malcolm Brennan, George and Donna Barber, and Bob Ketchum. We'll be right back.
Priest for Life organizes a monthly rosary led by a priest or deacon of the Diocese of Charleston every third Saturday in each month. Members from local parishes gather to pray the rosary from 8 to 9 a.m. at the West Ashley Abortion Facility located at 1312 Ashley River Road. That's at the corner of Highway 61 and Fusler in Charleston. For further information, Stephen Boyle can be reached at 843-763-0681.
This is Michael Brennan, and you're listening to Catholic Radio in South Carolina, and we are speaking with Beatrice Fedor from the Silent No More Awareness Campaign. Beatrice, tell us a little bit about your personal story and how you came to be involved with Silent No More and Rachel's Vineyard.
Well, Michael, I've had two abortions, and for many years, I have dealt with guilt and depression. I was grieving my children, but by our society's standards, they were just a mass of tissue and not real babies. I was feeling isolated, and no one could understand the forbidden grief in my soul. Going to church was painful because I thought that the sin of abortion was too grave to be forgiven.
Well, then what happened when you went to Rachel's Vineyard Retreat?
Well, during the retreat, I have encountered Jesus Christ. I have encountered a God who loves me, a God who forgives me and wants to give me His peace. I have also encountered my children, and I have entrusted them to the Creator. It has given me the strength to speak openly about my abortion experience by being silent no more.
And tell us a little bit about Silent No More.
Well, our goals are to raise awareness about abortion's emotional and spiritual and also physical consequences, and also to reach out to those who are hurting because of an abortion and to provide information about post-abortion programs such as Rachel's Vineyard Retreat.
Thank you, Beatrice, for your testimony, and our listeners can find out more about Rachel's Vineyard Retreats at www.rachelsvineyard.org. That's Rachel's with an S, vineyard.org, and then also at silentnomoreawareness.org.
Did you know that there's an abortion facility in this town? It may be hard to believe, but there's a place in this city where innocent children are destroyed and women wounded, emotionally, spiritually. The evil of abortion is real, and it's here, locally. But you can do something about it with 40 Days for Life. 40 Days for Life is a call for 40 days of prayer and fasting, 40 days of constant prayerful vigil, and 40 days of one-on-one community outreach telling your neighbors the truth about what abortion does here. 3,599 lives have been saved from abortion, and more than 9 out of 10 participants say they themselves have grown spiritually through 40 Days for Life. To see how you can take part here, from March 9th through April 17th, visit 40daysforlife.com. That's 40daysforlife.com.
This is Michael Brennan with Catholic Radio in South Carolina, and we're talking to organizers for the 40 Days for Life campaign in Charleston, South Carolina, specifically Malcolm Brennan, George and Donna Barber, and Bob Ketchum. George, I'm going to come back to you. Bob had mentioned this truck and this thing that you guys put together. Where did all this come from again?
After they made us take our tent down and take the tent away, all our records were getting wet and our prayer people had no place to go out of the weather. I had an old pickup truck. It's a 1978 Ford F-150. It looks, quite frankly, awful. And we built a little house on the back of it. We built it out of 2x4s, T T111 siding and deck screws. And we built it in 3 days, and we have gotten a lot of compliments on it. We even had it blessed.
Really? Which priest blessed it?
The pastor of Divine Redeemer Catholic Church, Father Ed Fitzgerald. And there is a picture of him blessing it on our website.
And Donna, why don't you give the website, the phone numbers again for anybody that might be interested in finding out more about 40 Days for Life?
Our website is 40daysforlife.com/Charleston. We have quite a bit of information on there. A lot of different things that you can look at and on pro-life issues and any of our upcoming events. And we also have a list on there of churches in the area who will be with us and taking a day during our 40 Days for Life this campaign. Our phone number, George's and mine, is 843-797-1131.
Okay, George, let's pick up with that truck story. So you built this thing from scratch, and where are you parking it on Fusler?
Well, the first day we took it out there, the police came and they looked it over very carefully. They told us we were not allowed to sleep in it. They took a lot of pictures of it, and they said we could keep it there. It was okay. When I give my speeches to the Knights of Columbus and other people, I invite them out to have a tailgate party. A tailgate party for Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Not to be redundant, but we're going to do that number one more time for those that are interested in the tailgate party for Jesus.
843-797-1131.
And that is all the way up through April 17th,
That's
correct?
Right. We conclude on Palm Sunday with our victory celebration.
Malcolm, I wanted to come back to you. You're the director this year. Tell us a little bit more about what you expect from this 40 Days for Life.
Well, you never really know what to expect. There's always surprises and new challenges. We've certainly had them in the past. The thing that has encouraged me to go ahead and step in is just witnessing how this team has pulled together through these difficult things that have happened in the past. We pray for, generally, it's for those who are opposing us.
And Donna, can you tell us a little bit more about the actual vigil site and what's going to go on for the next several weeks?
We started out the first campaign, which was 5 campaigns ago, with 6 churches and about 20 regular people who filled in between the churches. We now have 13 churches and about 40 regular people. So when a church takes a particular day, the regular people have a day off. On the days where there is no church, then the regulars are out there doing 4-hour shifts. We can also do 2-hour shifts because some people can't stay for 4 hours. But those people are there for the continuity of the area, to provide safety so that other people can come out and pray, to have people sign up and register, new people who have never been out there. We sign you up and give you a bracelet, which you wear at all times on the vigil site when you're out there. We tell you, you know, where to stand, and we have prayer material there if you did not bring any and need some. We also have chairs there if you did not bring a chair. You're welcome to bring your own folding chair. People sit there in front of the abortion clinic. There's a shade tree there. They can sit under the shade tree, and they simply pray. And that's what we're asking everyone else to do, is to come out and pray. And maybe you only have an hour to give. Maybe you only have 30 minutes. Maybe you're going to work and you stop by for a quick rosary. We have a lot of people who come at noon on their lunch hour. So we provide the continuity so that there's always someone at the site and the truck is staffed. And then we want the rest of all of the faithful to come out and pray with us for the end of abortion.
And Malcolm?
Some people ask what to expect if they're approached and they're not trained counselors and they want to know, you know, how they should react. And what I generally tell people is that first listen to them. If there's something that they need that you can give them, certainly do that. And if you're not comfortable counseling them, you can direct them to the pregnancy center, where they do have professional counselors.
Donna, could you give out the numbers and information for people that would be interested in being involved in 40 Days for Life in Charleston?
Yes, anyone who can come out and pray with us or take a shift or just be part of our group, please give us a call. The number is 843-797-1131, or give us an email at georgebarber14@bellsouth.net.
And that's George spelled G-E-O-R-G-E, Barber, B-A-R-B-E-R, all one word, 14.
Like a haircut, barber.
Okay. And Malcolm?
I was standing out there praying one day, and a woman came up to me and told me her sister was inside about to have an abortion, that she was married, but she was pregnant by another man. Her cell phone rang about that time, and she said, "Oh, it's my sister," and handed me her phone and asked me to advise her sister. You know, I told her she needed to trust God and that I had known women who had abortions that haunted them for many years, and I had known other women who had refused abortions and felt the child had been a great blessing. I said nothing else, and handed the phone back to her sister, and I didn't know what was going on. I stood there for another almost hour, and the woman never came out. But after I left, I got a phone call from the person who took over my shift to tell me that the woman did come out and save her child. So
amen.
That was a wonderful day.
And Malcolm, as you're leading this version of 40 Days for Life, and you wanted to personally appeal to someone to come out and participate, what would you say to them? How would you inspire them to do that?
I believe this is the number one civil rights issue of our day. I would ask them to think about what future generations might think that we've allowed this to fester in our country, all of the people that it's injured, not just the babies, but for each baby there's a mother and a father. You don't have to look at our society very hard to see how it's corrupted us. And I would ask them to pray about it. That's always the first place to start. Come check us out, and that God would bless them much more than they could ever give.
And George, you've been involved with this for a long time. You've had a lot of stories. Tell us the one that you think would inspire people to come out.
Well, yes, I did witness a woman who changed her mind. It was at a kickoff rally last year, and there was a young woman. She was standing across the street listening to our loudspeakers that we were having this rally, and a young man who was with us was standing not far from her, and I looked over that way once in a while. Pretty soon I looked over there, and he was standing there holding her hand, speaking to her. Meanwhile, on our PA system, turned down pretty low, there was a young woman, another young woman, who was giving her story about her abortion and what it did to her. Well, this young woman who was holding hands with this man speaking to him started to cry. Tears were streaming down her face, and she left. She saved her baby. Also, I'd like to say that for anyone who's a little timid about coming out to join us, many people call us, they refer to us as protesters. We are not protesters. We are advocates, advocates for the unborn child and the mother and the father.
And Donna, give us a female perspective. You've been involved with this, with George, for a long time.
Yes. Yes, and we have seen what it has done and what it does to the women. I have a very dear friend who had an abortion early on, and she has never really been the same. She's never really gotten over it. She's managed to get on with her life, but she's got problems. Until you come to terms with what you did, and until you seek God's repentance and His everlasting love, you're not ever going to be able to get over it. It's something that as a woman who is God created to bring forth life, it's something you can't get past until you have gone through the mourning and the forgiveness, the repentance, and everything everything else. And that's one of the things that when women do come to us, and we do, like I said before, get women who come back and they're looking for something, they're looking for their lost child. We try to help them and counsel them as best we can and then send them on. Sometimes they're just looking for somebody to listen to them. They come to us and they just open up and they just cry because they're trying to be brave and hold it in, and it's just not working. One of the things I do want to say about 40 Days for Life, we've had the pro-life movement with us now for almost 40 years. And while it's made some strides in a lot of ways, it was lacking something. And I think that 40 Days for Life has given that something and put it out there. It's a way for people to come out from their homes and come to the cross of Jesus out there at that abortion clinic and to pray and to ask God forgiveness for the fact that we allowed this to happen in our country. This generation and the past generation, since it's almost 40 years, are responsible for this. And somehow we've got to redeem ourselves, and one of the best ways we can do that is by coming out to the abortion site, number one. Number two, we have got to involve our youth in this program, in this movement. And the best way we can also do that is through 40 Days for Life, through education and through fasting and through prayer and educating them on the evils of abortion so that they carry on the cross, because we're all older and we're going to be older and not be able to do as much as we've been doing. So we invite the youth to come out and join us at our rallies, come out and talk to us, give us a call, and see what hours you might be able to just come out and pray with us. And then our prayer for you is that as you grow older and become young adults, you will be able to work this into your busy life and actually take over and actually become a vigil coordinator and a director, and you run the show.
And Donna, go ahead and give us that information one more time.
843-797-1131, George Barber, 14, at bellsouth.net.
And Bob, I'm going to give you the last word. What would your appeal be? What would your final word be to get people out there during this 40 Days for Life campaign?
The Lord has commissioned us as His people to be His hands and His feet, and when opportunity arises, to be His mouthpiece. And if we're not doing it, standing for life, who will stand for life? But if the Christian doesn't stand for it, who will? So we have opportunity to be God's hands, feet, and as I said, to be His mouthpiece if the opportunity arises. And we have that great responsibility. And when you take everything else into account of what goes on with life, there's nothing more important than that one that has no voice. We're not there, like I said, we're not there to judge the young lady, but we're there to reach out to that young lady, to that young man, to at least give them an option where they wouldn't have to carry that burden of doing something that they can't turn around, that child can never be replaced. And we have to be a part of that. The church, if the church doesn't do it, there is nobody that will do it. We have to stand for life. And it's time that we do that and quit being so sidetracked with the things of the world and see what's going on before our eyes. But it's kind of like the commercial when the animal comes on there and they're suffering and we change the channel because we can't watch it. This here, whether we want to believe it or not, we can turn our head, but it's taking place. Just in the Charleston abortion facility, there's almost 3,000 abortions a year in that one place. I don't know of any other reason, 3,000 lives, that wouldn't move us to get out there and take action. And ultimately, what we do know is it's going to be the Lord that's going to turn the heart. We are there as His ambassadors. We're not there as from our own cleverness or our own ingenuity to try to change a mind, because we can't change a mind, but we're there to be God's ambassador to that, to what looks like maybe an impossible situation, but with God all things is possible.
We've been talking with Malcolm Brennan, George and Donna Barber, and Bob Ketchum. They're coordinating the 40 Days for Life campaign in Charleston, South Carolina. I want to thank all of you for being here and giving your witness. and God bless all you're trying to do.
Hello, this is Bishop Robert Guglielmone from the Catholic Diocese of Charleston, South Carolina. I speak with you today to invite you to join together with others in our diocese for a period of 40 days of prayer, fasting, and vigil for an end to the scourge of abortion. People throughout the world are gathering together for this coordinated pro-life mobilization. Now, not all of us will be able to do everything that is required to raise consciousness about abortion, but each of us can do something. Can you pray each day that the Lord will inspire people and change hearts? Can you sacrifice through fasting to make yourself ever more aware of the need of doing something to end this horrible scourge? Can you stand for life at some peaceful vigil of prayer at some abortion facility? Can you continue to write to legislators and public officials to keep this issue before them and to encourage them to work for an end to this horror? There are so many opportunities for us to be involved, and we ask that you focus during this period of time on eradicating this horror from our society. Whatever you can do, I urge you to do.
Hi, this is Brenda Cherkis with Family Honor. This is Catholic Radio in South Carolina. The local segments are coming to you from our studios in Greer. Main number is 864-877-8458. If you are in the Lowcountry, you can call us toll-free by dialing 866-263-1700. And you can also donate on the web. Go to the website at www.catholicradioinsc.com. Just press the donate button and make sure to designate your donation. It's very important to keep Catholic Radio alive and well here in South Carolina. And now we're going to switch to a local guest we have here in the station, Valerie Baronkin. Morning, Valerie.
Morning, Brenda.
Valerie is the Piedmont Deanery Respect Life Coordinator in South Carolina. And Valerie, I think probably a good place to start is tell us a little bit with regard to what do you do as the Respect Life Coordinator for the Piedmont Deanery?
Well, the job is actually pretty simple. We meet as a deanery, and that when I say we, each parish actually appoints a Respect Life Coordinator, and we meet several times a year, and we talk about different areas of how to promote Respect Life, respecting life in each of our parishes. So each parish does things individually, or we have some initiatives statewide. We have some on the deanery level as well.
I know you keep real busy, and I've seen you involved for years. As a matter of fact, I cannot remember a time when I have known you when you haven't been involved in Respect Life efforts over the years. And this is great to see you actually in the studio, because we don't get to see each other that often, mainly at the Pro-Life March and Rally in January in Columbia. And of course, I'm always curious, especially for folks that stay in the pro-life movement, Respect Life movement for a long time, how they got involved. So Valerie, how did you originally get involved with Respect Life efforts?
Okay, basically what happened was I am actually a revert. So I was fallen lapse in my Catholic faith, and as I was growing more in my Catholic faith, and had come back after the birth of my daughter, I was doing activities, starting to teach CCD and that type of thing, which made me actually grow in my faith. So it was actually a trip going down to Conyers, Georgia, where we were doing a little pilgrimage, mm-hmm. and a friend of mine, I guess there was a conversation going on about Respect Life, and so I gave this song and dance about, well, I don't believe it's right, but I couldn't mm-hmm. tell anybody else, and a friend of mine just looked at me in astonishment and go, well, I can, it's just wrong, and I'm sitting there going, well, yeah, you're right, it is wrong. And so it really made me think a lot about it, mm-hmm. and just some encouragement from other friends. I remember Roger Haddad really encouraging me to go to my first March for Life and, mm-hmm. and praying at the abortion clinic and how these things were very necessary. And so, you know, little by little, of course, you just grow into these things, and it just God's providence, I think, more than anything.
Oh, I absolutely believe that. I think it's always so interesting to hear of the different roads people travel, both in their faith life, including those that may have fallen away from the Catholic Church for a number of years, but also on the road to a better understanding of the sanctity of life, the dignity of the human person, where they start out and so very often where they end up, years later, that uh-huh. they could never even imagine for themselves. And so often that brought about by somebody who providentially comes into their life for maybe just a few minutes, in some case a longer relationship. But always very interesting, and I think should serve it as an encouragement to our listeners out there if they know a family member or somebody that maybe is not where they would hope that they are in their walk on the journey of life, that keep praying, and maybe you can be people that are listening out there, maybe you can be that providential person that comes into somebody's life and just makes an invitational offer to attend something with them or what have you. I think I would like to talk also as well, because there is always so much going on with Respect Life efforts, I know, in the upstate and around the state. So we actually have a lot of ground to cover this morning. But tell us a little bit about what is going on with Respect Life efforts here in South Carolina.
Okay. Well, let me go ahead and start with the Deanery Respect Life. We try and focus on three major areas to bring to the parishes. So we try and focus on legislative action. So Holly Gatlin does a fantastic job, South Carolina Citizens for Life, and actually you have some roots in that as well.
Right.
But does a fantastic job of letting us know of upcoming legislation so that we can then disseminate that to the different churches through the Respect Life coordinators, and then possibly letter writing campaigns or calling, emailing our legislative officers that they can make a difference. So they need to hear from us. And so we have a really good network of being able to react very quickly in getting when bills come up. The next area is prenatal care. And we don't really do that much in there except for the baby bottle campaigns. Mm-hmm. So each of the Respect Life coordinators work with Sherry or Birthright or Piedmont Women's Center also to have these baby bottle campaigns to raise money, collect items that they can use to help women in crisis. And then the third area is education. And we do a lot of things with education as well. One of the things that I do on a deanery level, which is starting to grow on a diocesan level, is something called Rock for Life. And we bring teens in, go ahead and have a speaker, a pretty dynamic speaker, because you got to keep their attention.
Oh, sure.
We want somebody that's going to give them a chastity message. Mm-hmm. We want somebody to tell them. We usually have someone that is post-abortive come in and mm-hmm. share their testimony. And, of course, we have music, because mm-hmm. it is Rock for Life. So that is a great education area that we try to do. But there's also other education. I know St. Mary's just had an end-of-life issue, and I know St. Elizabeth Ann Seton is also planning on having some speakers come into the parish, because a lot of people are concerned about end-of-life issues and what is morally acceptable mm-hmm. in those situations.
Just let me stop you there, because in case folks are curious, that I'm sure there's many out there that have teenagers. Is the Rock for Life, is that an annual event?
Yes, yes.
And when is that typically held? Is it held like the same time every year?
We started it in the spring, but the teens seem to be so busy in the spring that we actually try and catch it right as they start in the fall, mm-hmm. before the fall sports start up. Mm-hmm. And so this year it'll be either the third or fourth weekend in September. And mm-hmm. so we're so grateful to St. Joseph's High School, who allows us to have this big venues.
Yes, and we're going to be coming back with a second segment to talk more about Valerie. But for right now, in case folks have to sign off and can't listen to us, Valerie, do you have a contact number that people can get in touch with you to find out more about Respect Life efforts?
Yes. If anyone wants to get involved and doesn't know their Respect Life coordinator, they can call me at my home, area code 864-297-8838.
Very good.
Or they can contact the Family Life Office for the Diocese of Charleston.
And how would they get in touch with the Family Life Office?
It's on the website, the diocesan website.
Very good. Lots of good information so far and lots more to come. We are here with Valerie Baronkin, again, who is the Piedmont Deanery Respect Life Coordinator in South Carolina. And we are going to be back with Valerie in just a little while. She has lots more to share for us about things that are going on with Respect Life efforts. Just a reminder, this is Mediatrix Radio, Catholic Radio in South Carolina. We hope you'll stay with us for a while to come. Thank you very much.
Hello, this is Bishop Robert Guglielmone from the Catholic Diocese of Charleston in South Carolina. I speak with you today to invite you to join together with others in our diocese for a period of 40 days of prayer, fasting, and vigil for an end to the scourge of abortion. People throughout the world are gathering together for this coordinated pro-life mobilization. Now, not all of us will be able to do everything that is required to raise consciousness about abortion, but each of us can do something. Can you pray each day that the Lord will inspire people and change hearts? Can you sacrifice through fasting to make yourself ever more aware of the need of doing something to end this horrible scourge? Can you stand for life at some peaceful vigil of prayer at some abortion facility? Can you continue to write to legislators and public officials to keep this issue before them and to encourage them to work for an end to this horror? There are so many opportunities for us to be involved, and we ask that you focus during this period of time on eradicating this horror from our society. Whatever you can do, I urge you to do.
Again, we are here in the studio with Valerie Baronkin, who is the Piedmont Deanery Respect Life Coordinator. And in this segment, we are also going to be joined by Judy Bruce, who is with Silent No More. And she's going to be giving a little bit of her testimony in just a few minutes. Let's start back with Valerie, because we still have a lot to talk about as far as Respect Life activities in the upstate and really also even more broadly throughout South Carolina. I know, Valerie, you wanted to talk a little bit about 40 Days for Life. Tell us what that is exactly.
Okay. 40 Days for Life actually is a, I would say nationwide, but we actually go beyond the borders of the United States. There's also campaigns in Canada, Australia, and Northern Ireland. And what that actually is a concentrated effort for 40 days that people can pray, fast, and community awareness. We encourage people to pray at the abortion clinic, and we encourage them to do prayer if they're not able to come at the abortion clinic. And fasting is always a way to ask for God's mercy on this tragic problem that we have of abortion within the United States. Mm-hmm. And just letting people know the awareness and the effects of abortion. And it actually coincided with Lent. We actually end the 40 Days campaign on Palm Sunday. We've actually do two campaigns a year now, a spring and a fall, and try and get people to come and pray at the abortion clinic.
And when let me interrupt just for a second. Sure. While I'm thinking of it. When is the fall campaign exactly?
It's basically the month of October. It starts mm-hmm. a little bit before the end of September mm-hmm. and then goes into November. But basically, it's the full month of October is okay. involved with the 40 days.
All right. Let me also take the opportunity to say, because I think this is so important, as you're hearing Valerie talk, and some of our other speakers certainly too, it's just a good reminder that there are so many ways for people to get involved. I think so often people, and it's true, they are so very busy, but there are things that you can get involved with that are just during certain parts of the year. There is certainly always prayer support as the foundation for all of these things.
Right.
And so really just encourage folks that are listening out there to just, you know, pray a little bit and figure out what is the best way for you to get involved with some of these efforts that Valerie and some of our other guests are talking about.
So going ahead with the 40 Days for Life campaign, one of the things that we've noticed is the abortion numbers have dropped. We haven't actually gotten official DHEC figures, but we do keep a tally of the cars that are going in, and when I've compared that to the actual figures, we can see that abortions have been dropping, and the Crisis Pregnancy, Piedmont Women's Center, and Birthright have told me that while we have our prayer campaigns, they are seeing record numbers of people coming in for help. And that is significant. I mean, they said both in the spring, both of them received record number of people coming in, abortion-minded women and just other people coming in for curiosity. So that is a very significant campaign and
Absolutely.
Something that all of our Respect Life coordinators have gotten behind in just encouraging people. Some of the other things that we do, we try and, like I said, do different things on a parish level. Several of the parishes in the upstate I know have done this spiritually adopting an unborn child. Mm-hmm. And so you actually pray for a child for 9 months. And I'll tell you, when we did that at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, you know, God has a way of letting you know that your prayers are fruitful. And so I did find that there was a child of a woman who was thinking about having an abortion that was born in our parish. And it was all during those 9 months that we were praying for the unborn child.
This is all such encouraging, good, wonderful news. And again, I think it shows the power of an individual, the power of a few people getting involved, deciding to do something, and it bears fruit.
Absolutely.
Bears fruit.
Okay, one of the other things that we do several things. The March for Life, we do Rosaries for Life, several other things. I'll go into a little bit of that in a minute. But I did want to talk about, we do have a Rachel's Vineyard. We have those all over the state, and that is coordinated by Christy Brown and Kathy Schmuggy.
And what is Rachel's Vineyard?
Rachel's Vineyard is a post-abortive recovery.
Okay.
So if someone, man or woman, has an abortion in their past and they want some healing, of course we know confession is God's mercy and will allow you to heal, but just being able to talk about it a little bit more. I've actually seen, as women and men come in, physical transformations as they go through the weekend. It is just incredible.
Wow.
So if you're just so burdened by this sin, then a Rachel's Vineyard would be a wonderful thing. So keep your eyes open. That'll be in the bulletins. But I also wanted to talk about a wonderful organization that has started up here recently, Silent No More. It's actually a wonderful organization in that women who have had abortions in the past can give their testimony. And it's being run here in the upstate by Beatrice Fedor. But we have someone in the studio who is wanting to share their testimony. So.
Yes, and that is Judy Bruce, who is with Silent No More, who is going to share a little bit about her testimony right now with our listeners.
Thank you very much. It was 30 years ago that I had an abortion. My testimony is one of love and forgiveness. My grandmother used to always say to me, "Jesus loves you, and so do I." I used to think how cute a cliche that was, but since she wasn't Catholic, she must not know much about God's love. I was in college when I became pregnant. My boyfriend was also a student. Marriage and a child did not fit into our plans. I couldn't face telling my parents my situation. I knew it would devastate them. Between the pressures of being abandoned by my boyfriend and the fear of my parents finding out, I was convinced that abortion... Excuse me.
That's all right. That's all right.
That it was the only way. I had no other choice. So we took that drive to Atlanta. I spent that trip in prayer. And I asked God to please, you know, if this wasn't His will, to put somebody there to stop me. And I didn't see anybody outside the clinic. But God has His plan, and that was not His plan. The clinic was fairly nice and comfortable. The front staff was friendly, and they were kind. I was called into an office to speak to a counselor. I convinced her that my decision was clear and final and the right thing for me to do. I chose to go under general anesthesia. As I was waking up, I saw many attendants around me. And later, the counselor told me that of all the girls she spoke to that day, I was the only one that she thought had made a clear and decisive decision, but I had cried throughout the procedure. A year later, I found myself pregnant again. My boyfriend was seeing another girl even though we'd been living together. I was damaged and feeling betrayed and angry. The second trip to Atlanta was reflective of these feelings. The clinic was cold and without comfort. The staff was without concern, and I felt like a piece of meat being led to the slaughter. There was no counseling this time, no one to show concern or to offer alternatives, and not a tear was shed. I was as stoic and as cold as they were. After this second trip, I was determined to make things right. My only answer was to get married and have the children I had thrown away. God would forgive me if I turned my life around, so I went husband searching. The problem was, is that I no longer deserved happiness, so it didn't matter to me whether I loved the guy or not. All that mattered was that I would be married and I could have as many children as I had given away, and more. 3 years into the marriage, I still wasn't pregnant. This fueled my feelings of God punishing me and my need to be punished. The good thing was that it drew me back to the church and to confession. But then I became obsessed with confession until the priest finally got angry with me. He asked me, "How many abortions have you had?" "Well, the two I've been telling you about." He flew off the handle at me. Looking back, it's very comical to envision this man so angry at me while he's telling me the most profound things I had ever heard. He told me that my sin was no longer the abortions, because they had been forgiven long ago, but rather my pride in thinking that my sin was greater than God's mercy and love. My sin was not forgiving myself, but mostly not accepting God's forgiveness. And he showed me a crucifix. There was my sin, nailed to the cross. Was my sin greater than this love Jesus showed us as he willingly crawled upon it? So I decided to go home and tell my parents what I had done. They looked at me with such love and forgiveness in their eyes, it was amazing. I now have this crucifix from their home hanging in my house to remind me of how much I am loved and how much God has loved me and forgiven me. On my last birthday card that my dad sent me before he died, he had written in it, had signed it, a little note saying, "Jesus loves you and so do we." It's no longer a cute cliche, but a very profound truth. I want to end by stressing to all of you out on the battlefield for life to remember these simple words, because in the beginning and in the end, it's all about love. Thank you.
Judy, thank you very much for sharing what I know is a very, very difficult and very personal story about your abortions, about everything that you went through, about your ultimate healing. I think we need to encourage folks. I am sure that there are people in our listening audience that have had abortions, perhaps that have had multiple abortions, perhaps who have taken somebody to have an abortion, counseled for an abortion. With 30-plus years of legal abortion in this country, there is a tremendous amount of heartache, of pain, I think of unresolved pain and unresolved anger. And one of the most important messages that I think we can let our listeners know about this morning is there is healing, there is hope, there is help. There is no need for you to suffer by yourself out there. There are people with loving arms outstretched, waiting and wanting to talk with you. We're going to chat for a few more minutes here with Valerie and Judy, and I think at this point one of the most important things that we can do is give our listeners some contact information for those, again, that may have had abortions, may know somebody in their family or friends, extended circle of friends that has had an abortion. Where can they go? Who can they contact if they're here in South Carolina?
They can contact the Family Life Office for the diocese, mm-hmm. and that is on the diocesan website. They also can contact Silent No More or Rachel's Vineyard. Each one of those organizations, there are national websites for those as well, and each one of those organizations will help get you the healing that you need. And like I said, for the Rachel's Vineyard, we do have several of those throughout the year. Here in South Carolina, so it's very local for you to be able to travel. We have it in very discreet locations so that it can be you can remain anonymous. And so again, I would just encourage you to go to the Rachel's Vineyard website. As I said earlier, the the healing, you can definitely tell God's hand is in these retreats, in that, you know, that it literally helps people come to terms with what's been going on in their lives. And one of the things that I should also mention, Judy had mentioned some of the distraught happenings in her life. Mm-hmm. I know Sherry had mentioned earlier about a young woman who actually committed suicide, and she was a member of St. Mary Magdalene Church. She was actually a friend of my daughter's, and so it was very close to my heart as well when all that happened, very dramatic. And I think that's when I actually started getting involved with Rachel's Vineyard and making sure that people had somewhere to go that were post-abortive, that realized, you know, they bought into the lie. I actually do talk to a lot of women that even are coming back in for their checkups at the abortion clinic, and they'll stop and talk about, you know, that it's something, their adrenaline is so high, their hormones are so crazy. At the time that they're pregnant, I mean, we can only help but support these women. I mean, when people tell them that it's okay and they buy into the lie that this will fix their problem, I mean, it is truly a lie. It hurts women to have abortion, and men, and every member of the of society. So, and
Valerie, let me also, once again, I've got to interrupt because I think this is an important point, too. Men very often are hurting from participating in an abortion experience, or coercing their girlfriend or perhaps wife or daughter, who, you know, various scenarios there. Men have come to these retreats, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And so men should as well, we want to encourage them to feel free to call and reach out for help too, realizing that this, you know, this problem really permeates so many different relationships and can be not just affecting that woman, but affecting the man as well, with unresolved feelings of guilt and anger and pain.
Yeah. Actually, I will also mention the hardcore person going into the abortion clinic is typically a mother bringing her daughter, which is so heartbreaking for me to see that they're not even thinking about this as being their grandchild. And so we've had grandmothers coming in with the mothers and going through the retreats as well. And so that also, when they realize what's going on, that they need the healing as well.
Very, very powerful, compelling testimony and information. And I think, again, just only underscores the huge need there is out there for all of these pro-life ministries, Respect Life ministries, both on the education end, the legislative end, and most certainly on this part that works with women and men that are post-abortive, the healing and the help and letting them know that they are not alone. Thank you very much for listening.
In the effort to end abortion, have we reached a tipping point? Is the momentum now on the side of life? Consider this. In more than 330 communities, 400,000 people have launched a major pro-life effort that's making a measurable impact, 40 Days for Life. In 7 coordinated campaigns, 3,599 babies' lives have been saved from abortion. 43 clinic workers have heard the truth and quit the abortion industry. And following 40 Days for Life prayer vigils, 9 abortion facilities have shut their doors forever and abandoned their deadly business. This effort is now taking place worldwide and growing. From March 9th through April 17th, you'll have an opportunity to join and make a difference with 40 Days for Life. To get involved, visit 40daysforlife.com. That's 40daysforlife.com.
Hello, this is Bishop Robert Guglielmone from the Catholic Diocese of Charleston, South Carolina. I speak with you today to invite you to join together with others in our diocese for a period of 40 days of prayer, fasting, and vigil for an end to the scourge of abortion. People throughout the world are gathering together for this coordinated pro-life mobilization. Now, not all of us will be able to do everything that is required to raise consciousness about abortion, but each of us can do something. Can you pray each day that the Lord will inspire people and change hearts? Can you sacrifice through fasting to make yourself ever more aware of the need of doing something to end this horrible scourge? Can you stand for life at some peaceful vigil of prayer at some abortion facility? Whatever you can do, I urge you to do.